Well, the problem was apparently I have two accounts in there. One named
Oh, I got
Walmart.
You. I got it. Hey, and welcome to the
Club.
Unwind, where we talk all things tech and video games. And we see who's better, Siri or Google Now at texting people.
Rob.
My name is Rob Steller, and I am your favorite Windows fanboy.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
And I'm Sean Thomas. Well, after the avalanche of news in the past couple, month or two, this week's been a little bit slower, but I guess it's been a little bit different. So I guess we can start with, on Monday, Grand Theft Auto Online was released.
Yes.
It had a lot of login issues, and I also don't own the game, so I don't know how it went, but I've heard it's gotten better since then.
I heard things. I heard things.
Okay, well, I do have the game, so I'll be the ambassador. So I tried to get into it. I think it started at 7 in the morning. I tried at around 12 in the afternoon. The first time I tried to log in, it just gave me a black screen and then just didn't work. And then the second time I logged in, I think I got to the character creation screen and then it froze. And I was like, all right, I'm done with this. Tried it again, yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Today's Thursday.
Right.
You said Wednesday.
No, so yesterday came out Tuesday. Wednesday. Came out
Welcome
Tuesday.
To our
Tuesday.
Podcast. Talk about calendar.
Siri, set a reminder. So I tried it again yesterday. I got through the character creation, and then it froze trying to get into the first mission. Happened again. Gave up again. Tried again this morning. Same thing happened again. And then I finally got through it. So I can say I played about 30 minutes of GTA Online. And then it froze again. it's pretty interesting. So I don't know how in depth we're gonna get, but it's kind of crazy
how many
issues.
Did you murder?
None. I haven't even seen any yet. That's
what?
That's how early stage
Are you sure
of this
it's GTA?
I am. Oh, it was Hello Kitty Island Adventure.
Online.
So
MMO. So what have you done? Like, what kind of, how does it work?
So the first thing you have to do, they force you to do a race. And so I did the race. You end up hanging out with Lamar. So it takes place before the events of GTA 5. So you end up hang out with Lamar, who's a kind of a extra character in the game who you see once in a while, but he's the main character in this online portion of it. And he introduces you to the city and then gives you a gun because, you know, what kind of game with this? What kind of GTA would this be without a gun? So I did that, and then I stuck up a convenience store, and I got a couple grand from that. And then I bought some new clothes, and went to the gun range, got matched against another guy, and did like a shooting range. So we faced off on that. I did not win, so that was kind of a bummer. And then. Yeah, then it froze.
But okay, so how does it work? Like, when you get into it, like, you know, if you play an MMO, you start in a tutorial-ish era. I mean, I assume there aren't levels or anything like that. So what?
Well, there are. You mean leveling in what sense?
Like, are there like RPG levels? Like, how does it compare to an MMO? Because it isn't an MMO.
So you do get experience points, reputation points, and you do have a level that. So you level up as you go along, and then I guess you're matched supposedly according to that level.
Hmm. Okay.
So you get a reputation. I guess you haven't gotten that far into it, but do you know, are there factions, I guess gangs or anything?
Well, you create crews, because it works through,
okay.
What's Rockstar's, the social, So you create crews through that, and then you can do missions as a team, you can do missions with random people. I guess a lot of it you could do as a single person, but then they have, you know, those bigger heist missions that are similar to GTA 5 that you are supposed to get, you know, at least a few other people with you.
So those are load instances?
So basically you go to a point on a map, like say you want to do a race. You go to this point on a map, you sit in there, and then it puts you into a matchmaking system, and then you got to wait for the other people to show up, which is kind of a drag that you have to do that. It'd be kind of cool if you just showed up and it was just there. But
it's understandable.
And I will give them a little bit of leeway, given that, you know, how many millions of people probably trying to play this game at once when they start.
It's interesting, though. So crews would be more akin to clans, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Not like a... Because I, I mean, I didn't know how they were going to do it, but I guess it'd be kind of interesting, almost like a throwback to GTA 2 if they did, if they had
the actual gangs. Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess it isn't an MMO, so I don't know why I'm trying to pretend it is, but a big thing in MMOs is factions. Like, mm-hmm. most games have, you know, whatever, light side, dark side, I forgot what World of Warcrafts are, but it'd be interesting to see that, although I don't know how they build that into the game. So, is the world the exact same as the GTA
yep.
world?
Yeah, so it's the exact same map, which is kind of cool, because you spend a lot of time, you know, I think we may have mentioned this in another episode, or just talking, Sean, but like, when you play GTA 4 or any GTA game for a while, you get to learn the map. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you don't have to relearn an area is pretty cool. So yeah. I have, you know, a general, I played through this, I finished the story. Did we mention that last week?
I think so.
Okay. So yeah,
Rob finished the story.
I finished the story. It took me about 32 hours. So, I mean, that's a lot of time putting into driving around the maps and getting to learn certain places and where certain things are. So, the fact that I don't have to relearn that is pretty cool.
But, you know, it's interesting. GTA is always good about this, and I can only compare it really to Saints Row. GTA, but by the end of the game, even like midway through, you know where everything is. You can take turns.
I wouldn't say you know where everything is. This is a pretty gigantic map.
Okay. Well, even, I don't know, I guess.
I mean, there are places in the map I didn't even see during the main storyline.
That's nuts. That's
I mean, it's huge. It's massive.
You play through the whole game, you don't even know where everything is. You think you're going to know everything, but you don't. So, yeah, that was my point originally.
Yeah. It's a good game. you know what? You can't use sarcasm until you cut your hair.
That was actually my motion. What was I going to say? So when you're playing in the game, do you see, is it like an MMO where you see everybody else walking
so
around?
So you can't, you basically... The only thing is, so they come up as little dots on your screen, so you know where all the other, I think it's 16 people at a time that are in your same map, or instance, whatever they call it.
Okay.
And so you know where they are all the time, so I having played a lot of these other MMOs, namely War Z, when I played that, people were kind of just assholes and just wait for people to come and then just kill you and take your stuff. So and this is GTA, so I was pretty much expecting that to happen. So I was trying to avoid people as I was driving through. So I'm like, they're just going to kill me. They probably have, you know, automatic weapons and have a little pistol. And they're just going to mow me down and take all that money. So I avoided other people so far.
Wait, so let me get this straight. So you're essentially on like a 16-person server?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like an MMO where everybody's there at once.
No, definitely not.
Oh, okay. I also heard that when you do a heist or something, you have a team leader, and at the end they're the one that divvies up the money.
Yeah.
And technically, they could take all the money,
yep.
but then the other people can retaliate and just murder you. So
right, and I this is in my experience, these types of games, people just tend to be, you know. Not nice, and just kill people anyway. so I'm waiting for that to happen. We'll see. We'll see, though.
Hmm. Yeah,
Just to be clear, when you do the matchmaking, like you said, you challenge the guy at the shooting range.
Yeah,
one of the 16 people on your.
No, so that isn't restricted to the 16 people.
Okay.
So once you go into a lobby, I think it's just open up to anybody. And then once you finish, from what I've seen so far, so I went into the shooting range, went to the area where, you know, put you in a lobby, got matched with this guy, and then after that, it kind of did the zoom out thing that it does during the game when you're switching characters, and then zoom back in, which I assume is just placing me in one of these servers.
Oh, okay.
Or in a different one.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'd be interested to hear a little bit more about it when you're...
It would be nice to play with some friends, you know.
If you want to send me your PS3,
that wouldn't help me.
Oh wait, do you have it on Xbox or PS3?
Xbox.
Okay. Wait, so you have Xbox Live?
Yes, I do.
I mean, obviously you do. What was I gonna say? I've heard that people. So one thing that's in there is the in-game stock market, and now the multiplayer it's there. And I've heard people have already tried to game it using regular stock. Ideas, the things that are used in the real world, like they, I guess a group of people on Reddit tried to do a pump and dump scheme, but for one reason or another, the stock didn't react that way. I don't know if it's because speculation doesn't work as well.
It also might just be the number of people that are in the game. Like, I mean, well, just you probably have to buy a ridiculous amount of stocks to be able to do that.
It could be, but I don't know.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine Rockstar didn't think of that.
Well, I mean, but the thing is, they don't necessarily want to avoid that.
No, that's true.
It's like Eve. Eve is known for having crazy stuff happen, but they kind of encourage it. So the only reason why those schemes work is because that's how it, in real life that works. Like people do pump and dump, but I heard it didn't work. I don't know. I mean, I guess it all depends on how the system is, how it reacts, and things like
that. We'll see. We gotta give it a couple weeks. Wait till they figure out their server issues, and when it calms down, see how it works.
Yeah, I think it's the government shutdown. All those guys are at home playing GTA.
Yeah, man.
You know, related.
It's not a coincidence. It happened on the same day.
I don't know. Did you have anything to add more about GTA specifically?
No, that's pretty much my experience so far. It's pretty limited, so we'll see. Next week, I'll talk some more about it.
Related to that, I want to ask you guys a question about, and this is a big deal because this is going to be much more common. Online launches. So GTA came out this week, and it was plagued with launch issues, you know, and it's really just overloading the servers, I think. Same thing on the same day, the healthcare exchange is open, and they had the same problems. Actually, in New York State, California and Connecticut worked fine, but in New York State, it actually got so bad, they literally just shut it down. You go to a page and it says, you cannot log in today, please try back later. So I'm interested what you guys think. What do you think causes this? I mean, obviously it's people, but do you think there'll be a resolution to this, or is this just a problem people are going to get at, are going to have to get used to? As you know, this is not a new thing. You know, even when iOS was released, just how you were saying. I mean, you're definitely able to get it, but it was incredibly slow.
SimCity had the same problem too.
SimCity had the worst problems,
and the crazy thing is
online only.
Yeah, the crazy thing is when SimCity launched like a month and a half later on the Mac, it still had the same server problems. So I kind of wonder if maybe a solution, not that it's elegant or anything like that, but maybe one of the solutions might be queuing up for use. You know, like some of these, it was kind of a trend for a little while on Apple on iOS apps where they would like have users sign up to use it, and then they'd show you a countdown to when you would be able to access the service. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's kind of a toss-up because one, it actually does manage the server load, and people can ramp up and anticipate what their server load will be and see how much interest there is for their product, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of like a hype machine for itself. So some people feel it's a little disingenuous, but I do see benefit to doing that. So maybe if they had like had people sign up and they do kind of an orderly entry process, I don't know. It's not particularly satisfying, and like I said, it's not really a technological elegant solution. It's just kind of old school. Get in line, but
I feel like it'd be pretty tough to do that with something like GTA, where you have millions of people expecting to have it at a certain day. I mean, I guess if you said that from the beginning,
it's about moderating expectations. Mm-hmm.
And I guess one reason why everyone expected that day is because Rockstar said it comes out that day. Because one thing I've seen other solutions to it in certain ways. Google tends to, when they do app updates, they tend to roll it out, so not everybody gets the first day. And I guess it's an okay. I mean, it's funny for people like me who know the update's coming. I get annoyed because I'm like, I want it. I even think about it, like maybe I should just go on XDA and download it and just put it on. But then I'm like, I just want the official one. But so the vast majority of people don't know this stuff is coming, so the rollout is fine.
Well, that's what they do. Yeah, I mean, that's what they do with updates to phone operating systems, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of a slower rollout.
They do that with iOS. But, I mean, they announced that it's going to come out with some of these big ones, but, like, if you didn't know to go download iOS 7, then, you know, a couple hours after it came out, you'd get a little notification. You'd just see the badge on the settings saying, hey, there's an update. Like, that happened with me with 7.0.2, right, which was a patch. And, you know, it wasn't as big of a rush to go download that. And I knew it had come out, but it wasn't a big deal to me, so I just waited until I got the badge notification, and it happened about a day and a half after it had been announced that it came out.
You know, so I kind of like it out. I mean, I guess it still causes some problems. With the Google rollout, you can't choose to update it. It sounds like it's the difference between getting a notification and not getting a notification. But if you really want to get it, you can just get it. With the Android ones, for at least me, it won't show up in the marketplace as an update. It'll just say, you know, it'll say you're up to date, and then someday later it'll say. But I kind of like having the choice. But
right.
The other thing I've seen a lot.
If you think about it, like Facebook does the same thing with features and stuff that they roll out.
Sure.
You know, like the graph search and stuff like that, and changes to profile, this, that, and the other. They do roll it out slowly.
Which is funny because I feel like Facebook, I mean, it is a website, so it has to be able to handle certain number of users. I mean, certainly, don't get me wrong, Google has so many services, Apple has so many services, Microsoft, but I feel like Facebook, really its only thing is its website. It doesn't really have any other services. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. It doesn't have any other things, so it almost feels like rollout is, I mean, I guess they must have the same problems, but it seems funny because they have to expect a lot of users using it at once. But I don't know. I just thought it was interesting, and I heard some people remark about, you know, and a lot of places in the media, they pointed out with the healthcare exchanges that it's like, wow, the government, like, you know, it's their fault. Like, you know, they didn't expect this kind of stuff. They didn't do it right. And I don't think people realize, while it's not necessarily a positive thing, it's pretty normal with tech releases that have gigantic, like, it just, and it makes sense. I mean, they're not going to add a billion extra servers just for day one when they're never going to use them again because it's going to die down. But it's funny how it's...
On top of that, so I was listening to a show where they're talking a little bit more about the architecture, and it makes perfect sense once you hear it. But, you know, they've got to pull from multiple servers that aren't theirs. They've got to pull from all these other insurance sites that are sharing their information. And then they've got to run comparison, checks on their own servers. So they've got to query all these other servers. They've got to get information back from those other servers. And then they've got to run... analysis of those servers and then spit them back to your PC once you say, you know, show me this stuff. So it's a really complex process, and they're not relying just on the servers that they built. They're relying on all these other insurance companies to give them the information. Because if you stop and think about it, they can't just have their own database because it'll be out of date in a matter of minutes. You know, so they always have to query live from the insurance companies if they want to make an accurate analysis.
The funny thing is, I mean, it's only going to get more difficult because they haven't done it yet, but at some point, the way the exchange has to work is that if you want to buy insurance on there, I don't think it's working yet, but they'll have to get information from, I believe it's 9 different government agencies, because you have to have your tax information,
right.
You have to have your immigration information, like citizenship, Department of, not defense, but there are so many different departments that all have to, they have all these different systems, and it's the government, so they're clearly not all in line, but it's only going to get more difficult. But I find it interesting, and I think, I don't think it's going to get any easier because I think more and more things are releasing to, you know, big internet releases. I think if they had Google Fiber, maybe it would work, but...
Everything has to happen in Austin and what's the other one? Kansas City?
It's already in Kansas City.
Yeah,
the next 3 cities are going to be
Austin,
Provo, Utah, and...
What?
I forgot the third.
Just come to Hartford. Hartford makes more sense than those places.
Hell no.
Than Austin?
No, than Utah?
Utah's actually a pretty good state. You know, it's funny because you know people from Utah would be like, Connecticut? Who even lives in Hartford?
All right, so let's talk. We just talked government. You want to talk Silk Road?
Yeah.
Something, yeah. I guess, depending on your point of view, something that the government did right, catching this guy and closing down Silk Road. What's his name?
Dread
his screen
Pirate,
name was
Pirate
Dread
Roberts.
Pirate Roberts, but what's his real name? I forget.
Ross Ulrich? Or
yeah, Ulrich was his last name. Yeah, so, I mean, apparently the guy was pretty young, too, like 29.
29, yeah.
So pretty enterprising. But I read a little bit of an article on Ars Technica, and they talked a little bit about how they caught him. I think you were saying this, too, Sean. Basically, they were able to go back onto hard drives. They just went back in time, basically, by looking at old hard drives for different servers. And before Silk Road was created, he made an account, his full name, at gmail.com, went on Stack Overflow and asked this question, like, how do I make a concealed server using whatever technology and PHP? And then a couple days later, he changed his username and his email address, because he's like, oh crap, that's probably not a good thing to do. And then they were also able to look at the code on how Silk Road ran, and it was like exactly the feedback that he got on Stack Overflow back when he asked that question with his real username. So I'm sure there's lots of other details and technicalities there, but just kind of interesting.
I heard even past that, so he changed, after he realized that he shouldn't use his name, he changed his name to Frosty.
Yeah.
And when they looked at, I forgot, something on the servers, the admin name was Frosty or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, obviously that wasn't the only thing they used. My understanding is the way they actually caught him himself, I guess we should start from the beginning. For those who don't know,
Silk Road
is essentially a website. That was essentially an eBay for illicit materials. The main thing were drugs like weed, ecstasy, coke, things like that. But it also sold really whatever they wanted to put up, passports, just any kind of illegal things. And the reason why it was able to run is because it hid itself in a number of ways. You had to use Tor to get behind it, which anonymizes you. And you had to purchase and sell in Bitcoins, which is really essentially an anonymous currency because it's an internet currency. And it was actually a hidden website. You can't just go to silkroad.com. You'd have to know the link, and it's a little funky. But it was hidden, but if you knew a little bit about it, it wasn't that hard to find, so it was kind of semi-hidden. But recently the founder and admin of it, Dread Pirate Roberts, was caught by the FBI. I read that the main way they caught him is that he had 9 passports sent to him. Like, obviously, they were counterfeit passports. And I forgot which department picked up on that, but they ended up following it to the apartment they were sent to in San Francisco, and there he was. And I don't think they knew at the time that it was him, but then they started piecing together other things.
You should also mention this is after, I think, over $1 billion of transactions.
I want to get to that in a second because I think that's an interesting point on a different thing. But, well, I guess we figured it out. I mean, he got caught. It's interesting because, you know, the service was all about anonymity and trying to hide everything. Apparently, he did a good job of making himself anonymous. I read a Forbes article with him, and, you know, they do all the normal things. Never meet the guy, and he sounds like this shadowy figure, but, you know, I mean, even the people who bought on the Silk Road, they don't send the stuff to their own house. They, you know, I'm just surprised he gets caught with these really stupid memes, really.
Right,
but,
right.
But yeah, so as Rob pointed out, the FBI estimates that they sold that over $1.2 billion worth of U.S. dollars worth of merchandise was sold on the Silk Road in 2 years. So, I mean, that's absolutely incredible. I mean, realistically, I could never imagine a business, any business that could see that kind of growth. Never mind the fact that there is zero advertising for it. And I would argue in some ways it's negative advertising because you have to work harder to find it. But $1.2 billion. I mean, year over year, that's insane. And it's really, it's just a 29-year-old guy who set it up. Like, it's not like, you know, Steve Jobs did a spin-off. It's literally nothing. And it's incredible, and it shows you what can happen too, because apparently the reason why it got so big is because all the drugs were in known purities, known quantities. One problem with drugs is in the illegal market is that it's difficult to trust people, because, you know, with a lot of drugs, people will just mix in other contaminants because either A, they don't know what they're doing, B, they just don't have access to the materials. I mean, this isn't Heisenberg where you have access to this high-quality equipment. But here, like, they even said the weed section was so big and you could order specific strains, whereas typically you just order whatever the hell is nearby, like whatever the guy
has. Yeah, because with a normal black market situation, you don't have the pressures of a regular market where you are kind of forced to be honest, right? You have to be honest or you're out of business. Well, when you're dealing in crime, it's like, fuck you. You know, I got a gun. I don't have to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't know necessarily who you're buying from, and even if you do know who screwed you, you know, if they've got more guns than you, you're not going to complain to your dealer about, hey, you gave me coke laced with baby powder. But, you know, this was really like an eBay, so they actually had seller reviews and stuff like that. So you're right.
Competition. You had a lot of competition between sellers,
you had
too.
To have good product and you had to have an honest reputation on the site.
It shows you how big reviews are, though, because you think about it, like, anything illegal, you're literally just leaning on whatever the dealer tells you if you don't know what you're talking about. Like, you know, it could be just some kid in high school who's like, yeah, I got this stuff. It's the greatest stuff in the world. But, like, you know, with this spread of reviews, there's so many things even outside this where you don't even need to know anything about the product, but you can kind of figure out what's good, what's bad. If you don't know anything about cell phones, there are a couple of cell phones that might rise to the top because you'll see the reviews and you can tell what's going on. And,
right.
You know, it's funny in a weird way. Silk Road could lead to safer drugs because you'd have more pure items. And actually, the FBI in the affidavit, whatever it's called, they said that the drugs they purchased were of high purity. So it's funny that, you know, it was good stuff. But it's also funny, I read, there are a couple funny things. First of all, its competitor, Atlantis, which was exactly the opposite. They were really brazen in that they had advertisement, which is crazy. They got shut down recently, and I haven't read anything connecting the two at all, but it just, I don't know, it seems funny. The Silk Road was pretty much compromised in July, as far as I know. So I don't think they just found out about this. So I don't know if there are any connections. But, I mean, this story has so many different elements to it. So first off, I just want to say it's funny we're talking about the reviews. It's funny that those reviews exist, but the accountability only goes so far. So I was reading about a situation where there was this seller who had a really good reputation. He had good stuff, whatever. He had high reviews. Everybody trusted him. And so the way Silk Road works is it's an escrow service. So essentially you pay bitcoins to the Silk Road. And then once you confirm that you got the product, the Silk Road will pay the seller. The whole idea is that way the seller can't just screw you out of money. But however, the seller can request early release of your money. The idea being if you trust the seller and you just want to get it out, you'll do it. There was a guy who had all these really good reviews, and he told all his sellers, he told all his buyers, hey, I have this guy who's trying to buy from me, he's trying to buy in big quantities, but he's not a real buyer, he's trying to screw me over, he's not going to send the money, and he's going to make me send the items, so I'm wondering, you as buyers, if you can trust me and give me early release, because I'm just trying to sort this out. So over 420, March 20th, he did a sale, and he essentially said, can you all give me early release so I can figure this out? He got a ton of money. He ended up just taking all the money. He got it through early release, and he never sent the stuff, and people never saw him again. So it's funny how accountability only goes so far. But but
hey,
you know,
man, if you're gonna be, well, that works though, right? Like that's typical. So if you're going to be dishonest, you can be dishonest once, so make it count, right?
Yeah.
Like that's a regular marketplace, right?
You defraud
the hell out of people once, and you go disappear.
It's kind of like Kickstarter. You know, there are definitely Kickstarter things that really don't go very far. It's not the exact same because there are some repercussions, I assume, but like,
yeah,
you know, you have to trust them. But the third thing that's interesting is apparently Dread Pirate Roberts, there was a user named Friendly Chemist who tried to extort Dread Pirate Roberts and said, I have the identities of a lot of people on the Silk Road. Give me $500,000 or else I'll release these names. So apparently Dread Pirate Roberts or Ross Ulrich, whatever, he tried to put out a hit on this guy for, $160,000 or something
like
that?
Yeah, something like that.
And
depends
so,
on the Bitcoin.
The FBI didn't list if they followed that lead, whether or not that hit happened. I don't know how...
I think they did, actually. I think they did follow up. Yeah, it never actually happened.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how credible this is, but the source I read said that the hitman told him that he had done it and sent him a picture, and it was in Canada, and then they went and they followed up with Canadian authorities, and it never happened, or at least they didn't have any record of it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a good enough hitman, you're not going to know that it happened, but I mean, it's...
No, I mean, you know he died, though.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, unless nobody cared about him, but...
It's Canada.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's so crazy, right? It's like fog and smoke, you know? It's like, okay, this anonymous guy, I'm going to put a hit on this anonymous guy. First, I got to figure out who he is, and then I'm going to hire another anonymous guy to go kill this anonymous guy that I think I know is the real guy, and then that guy's going to send me a picture as proof, and yeah, it's just so nuts, like... You know, amazing that this guy figured out, okay, I'll make Silk Road and be a billionaire. But on the other end, it's like, I think he put too much faith in the fact that he's working for criminals. He's working with criminals. You know, it's like, you know, it's
How much did he make out of this? Do they know?
So they approximated it at $79 million. Now, I will say the funny part of the money, so the way that worked, because he only made money through transaction fees. Like you
right,
know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, $1 billion, he made almost $100 million. That's 10%. That makes sense. But, however, this evaluation, I should mention, is based on current value of the Bitcoin. So they estimated that 660,000, I think, Bitcoins were transferred, and at current rates, it would be that much money. So I don't know what Bitcoins were at in 2011. Maybe it was less, so maybe you can't say. But even $500 million, I mean, it's really incredible. And the biggest thing it shows you, I mean, people know this, but it shows you how big the drug market is. Because the most of it was drugs. I mean, there was other stuff. But it shows you how big it is that, you know, like this guy is not a Colombian cartel. He is just a guy.
It's kind of funny you have these gangsters with Bitcoins.
Yeah. Like, is that the Bitcoins? No, I don't have Bitcoins. They're not physical currency. I haven't checked the blockchain, but like this guy, I don't even know how he did it. Like it sounds like he's a somewhat smart guy. He went to college. I think they said he took master's degrees. Like he took a master's degree, but he's really just a 29-year-old guy. Like he's not this mastermind. So it amazes me that this.
I mean, at the end of the day, though, it's just an e-commerce site like eBay. You know, I mean, it's.
Yeah, it is.
That's all it really is. With the added tour on top of it.
But you know what? The other thing is, a lot of people talk about this, and I truly believe this: that a lot of violence that happens is largely due to drugs. And it's not necessarily, oh, these tweakers are shooting each other. It's turf wars, gangs that are built on the money of drugs. All these cartels in Mexico, Colombia, and it, as weird as it sounds, like, you know, you wonder if there is an eBay for it, and they didn't have to, like, if your rep was based on the number of stars you had by the people who bought the drugs.
Instead of the people you killed.
I mean, you never know. I don't know how it would work.
I mean, you can't think this is going to be the last one that happens. There's going to be another thing that pops up. Literally. And it probably, you know, with the shutdown of the two biggest ones recently, there's probably going to be a few that pop up to fill this vacuum in the next year.
And the point is, they weren't caught because Tor broke down. They weren't caught because because Bitcoins were, you know, I don't know, exposed or something. They were caught because very
specific things. Yeah.
Like, he proved why he was not a criminal mastermind, because he sent counterfeit. Like, you just don't do that. I don't know. So it's interesting. I think you're right. I think they can pop up, and smarter people. I mean, with the notoriety, with the publicity that's getting, who knows? Why wouldn't the mob try to get in on this? Like, modern-day racketeering. Like,
well, that's the thing, is maybe they have. Maybe they just don't know it. True, you know? True. Maybe they're doing it right. Like, they're keeping it secret. Yeah. So.
But we would know about that. We all go to, you know, Engadget, the Virgin, VCR. You know.
All right, let's move on. We had one other big announcement from Valve last week. And that was on Friday after our Thursday show last week, and that was the announcement of a Steam controller, which actually Josiah pretty much called. Well, partially.
Not exactly, but yeah.
He said it would look like an owl.
It looks like a Darth Vader mask.
Yeah. And I said there'd be a touch screen. I just figured that you have to include that. I mean, it's pretty obvious, I felt like, with the trends and... And then also, you just need that kind of... Well, you're going to need something where... Because they wanted it to be hackable, right? Like, you know, that's the only thing that's going to work. You can't have a standardized setup for computer games because they're not all standardized. So it has to be programmable. And that's the best bang for your buck. It's a touchscreen because you can have any programmable keyboard or icons pop up on the touchscreen. So, I mean, that's still kind of speculation because they announced a touchscreen, but they haven't demoed it yet. So,
sure.
So that's still my guess. They might do it in a totally different way, but we'll see.
Okay, yeah, I definitely see that. The one thing I didn't expect was dual touchpads instead of analog sticks.
That threw me for a loop, but did you, Sean, you listen to that that podcast I sent you with Sean Hollister?
Yeah, not the whole thing, but yeah, I listened to it, yeah.
So he had some really cool insight as to, you know, with the touchpad versus an analog stick, there's a lot less latency. Not necessarily because, you know, the Bluetooth protocol is any faster, but because of the mechanical... barriers of an analog stick. You actually have to push the analog stick far enough before it actually registers that it's being pushed. And with a touchpad, though, it's instantaneous. It's just wherever your hand is, your finger is.
So
in that sense, I mean, it's a smart idea. And then on top of that, I've heard it has haptic feedback, right? Like you can actually program that touchscreen, those touch sensors as buttons. Oh. Right, so you can just, you know, because that the one on the right is where you'd usually have your four buttons, whether you're using a.
Oh, so all the four buttons are in the middle now, like that?
No.
They are. You could see them. You could see them.
Well, those are labeled buttons, but the you know, so look at the touchpad on the right. That's usually where, you know, your four buttons would be.
Right.
Those are actually buttons. They can be programmed as buttons. So if you tap the top of that circle, that's a button. If you tap the bottom of the circle, it's a button.
So can I share something with you guys right now?
No.
I had a controller.
Yes. Yes.
For the Genesis.
Yes. Nice.
Tell me.
I remember this. Holy cow.
Isn't that the same thing?
That wasn't programmable.
No, I mean literally.
No. But I'm saying like the idea of it though.
Like, yes, some of it is there, sure. What, Genesis? This guy.
That's the exact picture that I have up right now.
Oh, sorry, I can't see it. hey, I'm looking at a picture of a picture.
So it's funny that as soon as I saw it, I was like, wait a minute, I had this as a child, and,
okay.
And this is... This is just another reason why I tried to tell you guys that Sega was the most innovative video game company of all time. Nobody wants to listen to me.
Let's be honest. It's the same thing like when they show the picture of Bill Gates holding the tablet and it says, tablets are cool. And you're right. Like, yeah, he was right. But he just didn't do it right. But couple quick things I want to say that to clarify about the buttons themselves. So some people actually got to try it out, some developers. I think mostly indie developers. And one guy who blogged about it, and you guys should check it out, I'm going to forget his name. One of the guys on Team Meat, the guys who did Super Meat Boy. I'll see if I can get the link. But anyway, he was at Valve, so he was talking to them. And he actually mentioned to them he thinks they should add small nubs in the controller.
Yeah,
so that.
Yeah.
Now, the good thing about that is, yes, and he pointed this out, it feels weird. Like a touchpad, it feels weird to press it because there's not a button. There's something about tactile feedback that works. However, if they add a nub, they're clearly adding a button. And I think one big idea of this touchpad is that you can literally, you know, like you said, it's hackable. You can do whatever you want. If you're playing Super Meat Boy and you just want one giant button, you have one giant button. So I don't know if they'll do that nub idea. And then the second thing, Rob, you mentioned the buttons are in the middle. Now, what he said is he doesn't think that Valve's intention is that X, Y, A, and B are going to be regular buttons anymore. They're not going to be, you know, the buttons you use to hit things. They're going to be more like back, forward, which makes sense because they're very difficult to reach if you're playing.
However, back, forward, you mean like menu?
In a menu. Or something like that. Yeah, something like that. Yep. But what doesn't make any sense to me like is, if that's their idea, why would they label them X, Y, A?
Yeah.
Like, I can understand maybe you don't want to give it a name, you don't want to hit start and select because that's weird, but X, Y, A, and B, they're known as buttons.
Are the three the three bars at the bottom of those buttons too?
Yeah, I don't think they've said what they are. I assume it's like start and steam buttons, but I don't.
Well, it kind of looks. I mean, if you just look at it, it looks like the space bar in the middle, and then control and alt or something like that for as modifiers. But again, it's hackable, so you can make it whatever you want. But I mean, that's just visually kind of what it reminds me of on the keyboard. So it makes sense that they'd make those kind of modifying keys for some of these keyboard games.
So it's interesting. I mean, two touchpads is definitely very different. I think going in, you knew Valve was going to do something different. Yeah. Or at least I thought that. I think Valve's not a company that, you know, they're not going to just do the same thing. They have too much creative behind them. But from what I've read, people are saying it's good, but it doesn't sound like, wow, this is blowing me away. A lot of people said they still feel like they have to get used to it, which makes sense.
Well, sure.
And they said, or I'm taking this straight from his Tom's blog, but he literally said, you know, right now if you gave me an Xbox 360 controller or a Steam controller, I would still pick the 360 controller. And definitely, I am definitely going to give them at least some benefit of the doubt. Valve is way too good not to just, you know, give them something. But it doesn't. There are some products when they come out, they immediately blow you away, and you're like, "Wow, that makes sense." This doesn't totally make sense to me. One thing I do like, I think I was mentioning to you guys, they let me see if I can get a picture of the back. They use essentially weirder shoulder buttons, but they make stronger use of shoulder buttons, which I think is really smart. Because one thing I've found is when you're using analog sticks, if you're using the right analog stick, it's pretty much it's impossible to hit any buttons, which normally is okay because you're not always viewing, you're not turning and moving at the same time. But with like first-person shooters, that's why it's shifted that you have to shoot with the trigger buttons. We were actually playing an MMO called Terra, and I tried playing it with a controller because I didn't want to play with a mouse, and the thing is you can't map everything to the triggers, and so it made it impossible because I can't aim and hit buttons at the same time. So I like that they're using the back things.
Cool. Yeah.
But, I don't know. We'll see.
Wait, are those long gray buttons kind of in the middle on the back?
Yeah, I was just going to ask that.
Yeah, I assume so. It's all about how it fits in your hand, which kind of makes sense. So the idea is your hands are kind of in the back. It's almost like, what was that controller? Was it GameCube? There's another, where was the Z button on the GameCube? Was it,
That was,
64.
It was like a trigger in the middle on the 64.
Oh, yeah, 64 had the big ones.
The back one, yeah.
And the GameCube, yeah, but where was it? I don't know. It kind of makes sense. I'm sure when you feel it, it'll make more sense. It'll make more
sense. Yeah,
useful.
No, it does make sense. I just wasn't sure from the picture if those.
I think it's going to be, you know, we'll wait to see how it is, but, like, I'm just trying to picture playing an MMO or, you know, it's like StarCraft on there, and there's just no way you're going to have the same accuracy as a mouse.
I think an MMO would be fine. I think it would be a challenge to do specifically StarCraft, but maybe some other RTSs that were kind of built from the ground up.
Because, although you won't see StarCraft on this controller anyway. So,
well, yeah, but they did make that Halo game as an RTS just for Xbox, and you know, my brother played it out, and he said it was okay. You know, it's a different pacing and a different feel, and they have to do like resource management way different because that takes a lot of clicks. You know, so you want to reduce the amount of clicks in your game.
I mean, they tried StarCraft on the 64, and that was a god-awful disaster.
I think Josiah hit the nail right on the head. The real question is, yes, you're not going to get StarCraft. I mean, besides the fact that you're not going to get StarCraft, but the question is, like, the whole idea of having this touchpad is so you can have a controller where you can play Civ 5 on. You can play other games on. So the question is, are they going to build games that can work like that? A big point to this is this current, well, starting, I would say, with the Xbox generation, Xbox, the original Xbox, is the idea of first-person shooters. People point to GoldenEye. I would say, I think GoldenEye was more of the pinnacle of, or it started the multiplayer revolution on consoles. I would say Halo was the first game that figured out that a controller is not a keyboard and mouse. And a couple key things they did were, or did was, they made the movement slower. When you jump, it's a slow movement. It's not quick. And aiming is more deliberate. And then they moved to dual wielding, which is much more comfortable on triggers. Mm-hmm. Games before that, mouse and keyboard, you would have these quick aiming. I mean, you would be destroyed. When they put Quake 3 out on the Dreamcast, it was awful. Because they're like, you can't play. It's made for mouse and keyboard because it's all about... It's all about snapshots. You know, you can get that. You play a railgun and it's pinpoint accuracy. But instead, in Halo, it's not like that. It's much less pinpoint. It's a lot more splash damage. You use your grenades more, and they built the game around that. So,
I think.
Yeah. Sorry.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
The last point I was going to say with strategy games, if you've heard of a game for Android and iOS called Rim Capsule. I find it really fun. It's a really basic strategy game, but it works. It's totally fine on touchscreens. And you know, the big thing that makes StarCraft difficult is APM. How fast are you clicking? Micromanagement. Micromanagement is going to be way more difficult on the controllers, but if you could figure out a way, I mean, it'd be fun if you could do an RTS on there. So.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say a good example that's out in the wild right now is Diablo 3, right? They had to re-image it for the consoles because you can't just go around clicking on bad guys. And so it's more about positioning your character and aiming, you know, in a straight line or whatever, and then pulling the trigger to or pressing the buttons to activate your ability instead of like actually clicking on the enemy. So it can be done. It just takes some thinking about how you want to lay out your game and stuff like that. So Sean, you said it wasn't a real wow factor, and I think it actually is kind of cool. I don't think I'm going to get a Steam box or anything like that, but I kind of want to try that controller out and use it for some of the PC gaming that I do. So, I'm most excited about the controller. Let's put it that way. With those three announcements that they made, the Steam OS, the Steam Box vendors, and the controller, I'm actually most excited about the controller. Did they give a price point on it? Did they say how much it was going to be? Okay.
They haven't. I mean, yeah. I don't even think they know that yet. And,
yeah.
And as you mentioned earlier,
if it's like 60 or 70. I might pick it up. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's a funny point you just made. So with the controller, I definitely see what you're saying. Because one thing with all the Steam announcements, that was the only really new thing you could say. I mean, all the other ones we kind of knew were coming. But one thing I should just quickly say that, so the Steam controller, some games will just work out of the box. Like Super Meat Boy, that might just work because it's just one button. Some games won't work out of the box or it'll be tough, and you might think, hey, I'd rather have a mouse and keyboard. So like we said, it's only going to work if people make games around it. But the kind of elephant in the room is, a Steam box is just a computer. So if there are Linux drivers made for PS3 controllers and for Xbox 360 controllers, people might just plug those in, and then developers will just make it for regular controllers. Because, you know, who knows, maybe developers don't want to spend the time to program a game for this special controller. They just want to maybe make the game for SteamOS, or they're just going to port a console game anyway. So, so the success of this controller, I think, leans heavily on developer interest and sales of the Steam box, and it's going to be difficult with such an open platform to push something unless people really want it.
Well, I think I get what you're saying, but I think it doesn't have to be made for that controller. It just has to be made accessible to controllers. You know, meaning an RTS that has a lot of heavy resource management. There's going to be tons of clicking, you know, and that doesn't lend itself to a controller. Or the way Diablo 3 plays on the PC, lots of clicking. That doesn't lend itself to a controller. But if the game conceivably can be played on a controller, then you can play it on the Steam controller because it's mappable. It's just like, you know, I recently bought a gaming mouse, and, you know, I don't have to play games just made for this Logitech gaming mouse. It's like I go in and map the controller, and so there's a little bit of software that says, when you open this app, change to this profile, and button 5 equals C, and button 4 equals W, and, you know, whatever I map it to. So I think it's going to be the same thing. It's just, can it logically or naturally be played with a controller versus does it have to be played with a mouse because you have to do a lot of precision clicking on things, you know?
Well, the only counterpoint I would have to that is just the thing is, I think it's, I think most people are going to get the Steam box probably have an Xbox or a PS3 controller. You know, if gamers are in a situation where they're like, I can either play games on my Xbox controller, which I really like, or I can plug in my wireless keyboard and mouse to play the other games. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's
no, I get that.
I think people will have all three peripherals.
But the thing is, it's a peripheral, right? Like, people don't buy an Xbox because they like the controller. You know,
we talked about this last week.
Go ahead.
We talked about this last week in that if you're going to make a box like this, you know, to be used at your TV, the majority of people are not going to be wanting to use.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. Right.
But. You know, I think we have to accept that the Steam controller is just a peripheral, right? It's not like I'm going to go buy a Mac because it has an awesome mouse or an awesome keyboard, right? It's just a peripheral. So it's
Surface has an awesome keyboard.
They have to make sure that people don't feel like, oh, I can't use this because there's no peripherals. So they're going to make sure there's a peripheral option. But I don't think they're planning on getting rich or selling Steam boxes, or even selling more games because of this peripheral. You know, it's just part of the environment.
I definitely see what you're saying. And actually, as negative as I'm being, I'm excited too. It's weird because input is an area that's been innovated on a lot, but a lot of it's been failures in a weird way. But it's cool to see that somebody has new ideas for the controller. And I trust Valve at least to make a good product. At minimum, it's going to do a good job at what it's meant to do. Like, I trust that the touchpads are going to be top quality, the buttons are going to feel good. Like, not like the Ouya controller, which is panned across the board. I mean, it wasn't trying to do anything new, and everybody said it was just crap. So I at least trust them in that. And it's funny because Actually, I should say Input is a place that's been innovated a lot lately, but it's funny, like, the Kinect 2 is awesome, but nobody knows how to use it. Like, it's one of those weird things where I feel like it should be super duper awesome, but it's not, because nobody, I don't know, it almost seems ahead of its time, but it doesn't feel ahead of its time. I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, the controller hasn't changed in, what, like 15 years? It's been a long time since...
Well, I mean this there have been a lot of evolutionary things, but not revolutionary things. I think this is the closest I've seen to a revolutionary in a long time.
Well, the Wii controller was pretty revolutionary, I'd say. But that's not a controller.
Oh, yeah. All right, Josiah, run us through the last few topics real quick.
Okay, last three topics, lightning round here. So Apple, it's been confirmed that...
Wait, hold on. You're standing up, aren't you?
Of course I'm standing up.
Ah, all right. Sorry, go ahead.
That's what I do now. So Apple bought this company called Q. You guys probably don't know what it is because it's been an iOS app, but it's an Apple way to, or an iOS way to get close to Google now. So the thing is, you could link it to your Facebook account, link it to your any number of Google Mail accounts, link it to Twitter, and when you link it to your Google Mail, it also links to your calendar. So then it's a calendar, but when you make an appointment, it'll find like the Facebook or LinkedIn profiles of the people that have also been invited to that calendar. And then, you know, and it'll say, do you want to call this person? Do you want to text this person? Based on the fact that it's pulling in their contact information, it'll tell you when you need to leave for a meeting, you know, based on traffic and stuff like that, your GPS data. So, you know, it's not really new territory because, like I said, it's basically Google Now an attempt at Google Now on iOS devices, and there's even another company called Tempo that does very similar stuff. The other thing it does is, like, based on contextual information in the emails and the notes for the calendar event, it will figure out which emails actually pertain to the calendar event. So, like, if you've been emailing back and forth about a certain event, like we're organizing whatever a golf tournament. And I don't know why I just said that because I've never played golf, but but you know, it'll find all those emails and say and attach them to the event, so I don't have to write notes in the event. I just open the event and I see these emails attached to it, and it does a pretty good job of figuring it out. So anyhow, Apple just bought this, and the rumor is between 35 and 60 million. I know that's a huge spread, but that's a huge buy for Apple because I think a couple shows ago, we were talking about how Apple will typically buy, for the last 5 or so years, they've typically bought one company every 2 months, and it's for $5 million or less. So this is a huge buy for Apple. Not that, you know, they've got another article just came out that says they've got about 10% of all free cash for corporate companies. But anyhow, so really quickly... that's Apple buys Q. Any comment? Any thoughts?
Hopefully I can develop an app that'll sell for $35 million.
So Rob, I just gave Rob my old iPhone, and
yes,
we'll save that for next show. But Rob, you should try out Tempo because after Apple bought Q, they pulled it from the App Store. So try out Tempo because
yeah, just look for it. All right, keep going.
Sean?
Yeah, sure.
No comment? I mean, you have Google Now, so...
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, in a weird way, I think it validates Google Now to some extent.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that Apple wants to do that, and I think it's a smart move. The money thing is interesting. You know, I don't even know how to evaluate app developers, because $30 to $90 million, it's definitely a lot of money, but it's funny to think not too long ago Instagram was sold. Granted, Instagram has far more users. I mean, it's in a magnitude, but it was sold for $1 billion, you know?
Right.
So I don't even know how to value companies anymore. How this is, you know, maybe MySpace will be sold as an app.
Well, speaking of a cool billion, Twitter, they announced their IPO, 2 weeks ago? But it was under this new law that said they could do it privately as long as they had under a certain amount of revenue. And so they finally release the public details, and they're setting their IPO for a cool $1 billion. So similar to Instagram, which was bought privately, but yeah, so they're going to try to raise $1 billion valuation in their public IPO. So thoughts?
That's ridiculous.
Too much.
Well, I mean, Twitter's. I mean, I would say.
No, sure.
Instagram was sold for $1 billion. I guess it's weird to think that they're on the same level. I mean, it's a very different way it was bought. You can't really compare it. But Twitter is definitely that thing that I didn't think would be big and has become incredibly important and has kept its importance and
value.
I don't think that's too high at all. I just think it's just crazy how much it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, app.net is not going to sell for $1 billion.
Yeah.
So the thing is, so they had to release their numbers to the public now, and it looks like they're not making money, actually. They're making a lot of revenue, but they're not, you know, they're still losing money. Wow. They have a net loss. But you can see where this is going, and you can see how they're starting to get more serious about how they might incorporate ads. They bought Vine recently, earlier this year, and you know they could have those quick 15-second ads and stuff like that. So, Facebook followed suit with Instagram. They added video too, just like Vine did. So I see a lot of potential here, and then they're figuring out new ways to sell data to different companies. They've got a partnership with Nielsen, the rating company. So I think it makes sense. Like they haven't turned the corner and started making money yet, but I can definitely see that they're gonna. I really think they're gonna be making money. It's kind of like Amazon. For a long time, they were in the red, and then boom, when they got to the black, they were in the black, and they've been making money hand over fist. So
$1 billion. It's funny, one interesting thing you mentioned, so because Facebook had some issues too where people didn't really know how their monetization was, and I don't know how the percentages work, but although I feel like it might cheapen the experience and the brand, I really hope they start selling more ads or emoticons or whatever, because I know that a lot of money they make is through selling their data to other companies, so that's, you know, you can make a good amount of money on that. I mean, you know, having billions of users is very, very valuable. And I don't know, as much as it would cheapen the brand to have ads and all that stuff, but man.
Well, they have those promoted tweets now, and
To
be honest, they don't bother me the way they've been doing them. You know, it's easy enough to kind of ignore them, and when something catches my eye, I look at it for an extra couple seconds. So I really don't mind how they've been doing it, actually.
Yeah, and I'll say, I mean, it's one of those things, when you have enough leverage, I feel like you can control the obtrusiveness of ads. I don't find Google ad results to be obtrusive at all. You have to pay a lot of money to get there, but really, they're just the top ads. They're all text. Even Gmail ads, like I see them clearly, but they don't really bother me that much. And but I think it's only Google can do that because they have so much leverage. And so in the same way, if they do it right, I mean, they actually, a side note, they said that there's a talk that the Gmail app might have ads. And I was like, oh God, I don't want ads on here. But you know, if they do it right, which they have done in the past, I guess it's not that big of a problem. It's really the selling data. Especially because you're selling your data as an unknown quantity. You don't really know how it's being sold, what's being sold, and how it's being used. So that's the fear I have with any of these kind of things. But we'll see. I mean, they got to make their money.
Okay. Very last story for the night. We got some other cool stuff to talk about, but we'll save it for next week. Last thing just came out. Adobe announced that they have been systematically hacked for a sustained period of time. They didn't. I didn't see exactly how long, but they said it was a long-term hack, and they feel like 2.9 million accounts have been potentially compromised. That's usernames. That's passwords for the username for those accounts. It's email addresses and regular contact information for those accounts, and potentially encrypted credit card information. 2.9 million accounts.
That's crazy.
And I'm expecting an email from them any day now because I have purchased Adobe products. My wife went to fashion school, fashion design school, so we had to purchase Adobe CS. I'm expecting an email from them any day now saying that I might have to change my credit card number. So what do you guys think? 2.9. And the other crazy thing is they've been making this push for CS in the cloud.
Yeah.
Like, that's and, their new, and, that's you know, the new this one. This is potentially a huge blow to that business model specifically for them. So thoughts?
Well, what I'm reading is that at least it was encrypted. I remember the LinkedIn hack. They were saying that some of it was plain text, or was it Yahoo? I forgot. And people were all complaining that it wasn't salted and hashed, and I can understand that. So at least there's the hope in that. But I mean, this is an awful thing, obviously, and it's funny because I've definitely seen places, and like the internet is full of places where people buy and sell credit card numbers. It spreads. You hear about this stuff. Your stuff will be used. The thing is, as much as I hate it, in a weird way, I'm kind of complacent because this happens. Like, and this is a big issue. My brother actually works. Part of what he does is security for his company, and he talked about it. It's like, especially like, not to pick on them specifically, but China has a very strong hacking group, and.
Yeah.
These hackers are so good, and a lot of companies, they might have decent groups, but they can't organize like hackers might. So they might be good at one thing, they're not good at another thing, and it's, I don't know how else to put it, but it almost feels like this is just going to start happening. And hackers are not stupid. They know this is going to happen, and they know they can get data banks. I mean, it's still Adobe's fault, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to exonerate them, but it's like, I feel like this is so common. It's funny you say this because I just got an email from a different website. I forgot which one. I didn't use my credit card or anything on them, so it wasn't a big deal. But they said their accounts got hacked. So they said reset your password. So it's like, it's sad. This is just a normal thing. This is modern day bank robbery. The only difference is, you know, they don't have to go anywhere. And it's really, all the accounts are pretty much in one place. You know, it's one big bank. So... I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I think there's an old saying. Who's the guy, Dillinger, who used to rob banks? And they said, "Why do you rob banks?" And he said, "Well, that's where the money is, right?" So it's like, you know, where the hackers are going to go. They're going to go where these credit card and personal information are kept. But I haven't seen details about how the hack happened. Like, what was the vulnerability? Anything like that. I think it is, to your point, Sean, yeah, this stuff will just, it's part of the landscape now. And actually, I'll give Adobe a little bit of credit right now, at least, for acknowledging that they did get hacked, because a lot of times companies will hush this up. But like I said, I'm giving them a little bit of credit right now, because other details have to come out. And like, I want to see, when did they know they were hacked? And you know, because they just announced it today, maybe they knew back in February that they've been being hacked. So I want to see those details. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to get an email from them, and you know, they'll probably offer to pay. The typical thing is to pay for a year subscription of credit checks or something like that. So
I want to mention related to that really quickly, because it's so funny we're talking about this. Not too long ago, I think they actually caught him, if I remember correctly. I don't know if you guys remember, but maybe a couple months ago, there was a big release that some Russian website had all these details on some big people in America, as in, like, Jay-Z, Beyonce, Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI, the First Lady, they had the Social Security number, credit information, all this stuff like that, and they had tons of stuff. And recently, I think they caught the guy who initially hacked it and sent it to the Russian site, and they had gotten a huge trove of Social Security numbers. And what I was reading about it, I mean, they talked about a lot of websites that and forums that just, that was their main business. They sold Social Security numbers. So it's like, I mean, they can get your Social Security number. And this, it's funny, talking about these exchanges, I guess you could say in the healthcare field, but we talk about how in medical records they're all disparate. There's all these different kind of medical records. It's so difficult. Whereas in some countries, like say Taiwan or like Canada, Britain, like a lot of countries have these consolidated records, and it makes it so much easier because you have one record that follows you, yeah. and it makes it simpler. But then on the other end, you're like, man, these guys can get your credit card numbers, they can get your usernames, they can get your social security numbers. I don't know what they would do with it, but they can get your health records. So it's it's scary. Technology is an awesome thing, but it's also, I don't know. We don't know where it's going to go.
Well, why can't we just jump ahead to like Star Trek times when they figured out and nobody needs any money and stuff like that?
On a brighter note that we can end with, trademark was filed for Half-Life 3.
Yeah. that was in Europe. Was it in Europe. In the U.S. too?
Okay. No, in Europe so far. But that means we'll get to see it soon. It's on the way. That's all that matters. Huh?
It'll be a launch title for the Valve box or Steam box.
Oh my god! Imagine if it was exclusive, I'd have to buy it. Like,
give your prediction. Is it gonna be Steam?
No, no way. There's no way. They would give up too much. Just to wrap up the show. So as Josiah mentioned earlier, with his new iPhone, he has now given his old iPhone for me to try out, and being the gracious person that I am, accepted the challenge to use iPhone for 2 weeks and see what my opinion of it is. And granted,
you put your SIM card in there?
I did. I put it in today. I was texting you today from it. So granted, my hands burn every time I touch it.
But he's spelling everything correctly now, and he gets in it.
You know, I find it really hard to type with the case you gave me, though.
You take the case off. That's fine.
I don't want to drop it, man. These things break easy. I've dropped my phone like 10 times. It never breaks. Don't worry, I won't drop it. But anyway, so if you have any apps or things that I should download that I clearly don't know about, leave it in the comments. And I think that's it, right? We have anything else today? Yeah. So yeah, as always, join us. We'll be back next Thursday around 8 o'clock to do another show. And yes, thank you very much for watching. We'll see you next week.
Good night.
Half-Life 3.